Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00083. Recorded on May 7, 2025. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Chapter 83. Hornswoggle, Part 2. Hornswoggle, Part 2. Chapter 83.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88. This monologue is continued from the previous episode, Chapter 00082, Hornswoggle, Part 1.
So, the world of professional wrestling is full of characters, right? Characters. Here's some more wrestlers' jargon. Gimmicks, right? Gimmicks. They call their characters gimmicks, these portrayals that these men and women do as professional wrestlers. They rename themselves, they dress a certain way, and they play a part no different than an actor or actress would do, right? And they call it the gimmick. It's their gimmick. And some of these wrestlers throughout their career will incorporate several different gimmicks, you know. Beginning of their career, they try this. It doesn't take with the audience. They try something else. They move to a different territory. Ownership in the territory suggests something different. You know, well, a wrestler could be 5-10 different gimmicks or characters in the course of his career. Some just come in and be themselves and hit a home run, and you know, but that's few and far between. So now you got these gimmicks, these characters, and they interact with other gimmicks, other characters, and this creates the dramatic tension that's really what wrestling is all about. I mean, professional wrestling, it's well known, it's been out in the open for 40 years plus now. It's not real. I mean, the matches are not real. Everything is pre-designed, everything is scripted. Now, the athletics that these guys do, the stunts, the moves, they're all real. They're all real. But no, they're not necessarily pounding the living daylights out of each other. You know, there's incidents where you go to, you know, pretend to punch somebody and accidentally clock them upside the head. They call that, here's more jargon for you, a potato. It's a potato. An unauthorized shellacking is a potato. So these gimmicks interacting with other gimmicks create the tension and the drama that's behind these feigned and scripted wrestling matches, right? It's really about these characters. And a lot of these wrestling matches end up being the results of interaction between the characters, between the gimmicks. And oftentimes it's to settle a score, right? So you get these storylines going now between two or more characters. And those are called angles, right? Those are called angles. That's further wrestling jargon, right? The angles are the storylines. And the whole thing really turns out to be something of a soap opera, except it's for a different kind of crowd. It's for like the roughhouser kind of crowd. You know, rough and tumble people that like to fight, people who like to settle things in a plain manner. That kind of living, it seems so lost in our modern beta world, right? B-E-T-A, beta. You know, you see, like on my job, I'll just give you, try to make a really quick example of it. On the job here, yeah, I told you, I work in transportation. Once upon a time, it was pretty much a boys' club, right? All men worked it. And then you get the odd, tough kind of woman who would fit in, try to prove something, you know? That was like a theme of a lot of movies and stories in the 70s, right? You know, the independent woman, the capable and able woman. Anyhow, well, basically, it was a men's world, right? This industry, as well as so many others, as things were at the time. When disrespect in the workplace occurred, you'd go out by the dumpster and settle the score with fisticuffs, you know? Or you'd have a yelling and screaming match at each other. But now in the beta world, and the infusion of so many women into it, right? I mean, it's the induction of women into these kind of situations take away that quick settlement. You know, when we were boys, we'd get in fights all the time, right? We'd play football, somebody would tackle you, you thought maybe a little too hard, a little out of spite, and you'd get up and you'd throw the ball in his face, and then he'd come up and throw his dukes up, and it's a fight, you know, and you'd be each other's mortal enemy for 10 minutes, and then you'd fight it out, and you'd be done, and then you get on with the game, and then you're buddies, and you walk home together, and you talk about that great catch that you made, and you know, and it, life just moved on. You got through the bullshit of the friction and everything like that. Wrestling is more kind of on those lines, you know. Disrespect happens, there's a score to settle. You know, there's a bad guy, there's a good guy. The bad guy is the one who's always creating the problems. The good guy is the one who's always got to deal with the bad guy, right? They go back to, again, you got the face and the heel in wrestling, right? So it's like a soap opera for roughhousers. You know, the beta world now, everything is so subtle. You know, strife is managed in subtleties. It's little political maneuverings and stunts, getting people to be on your side. Going like legal routes, you know, going through litigation to solve things rather than going out to the dumpster and fighting it out, you know, and because so many women are involved, a guy can't take a woman out to the dumpster and beat the shit out of her. You can't do that, right? So, you know, the world's neutered, and this bullshit will play out and play out and play out. This beta style bullshit, it's cloak and dagger crap, and it just, you can never put the truth right on the table, and you can never come to just a quick resolution of it, you know? You can never just settle the score and come back together. It just doesn't ever go that way. The enmity just plays out forever, it seems. I just don't see people coming back and being friends again, you know? When something happens in the workplace, and it's ridiculous, but it goes on, right? But that's your beta world for you. Beta world is a world where everything is designed for the benefit of the weak, you know, instead of for the benefit of the strong and the weak aligning with the strong, you know. Now the strength is given to the weak, and everything sucks. It just does. It's not a man's world anymore. It can be in a snap of a finger, but it ain't as it is, you know. Too many men have had their yarbles chopped off in the process. Very sad to see. And you know what? Going with that, the popularity of wrestling has also gone down the shitter too. You know, it's not that popular anymore. It's not a household, you know, you don't have household names You know, everybody in the 80s knew about Hulk Hogan. Everybody in the 90s knew Undertaker. You didn't have to have anything to do with wrestling. You've heard of these characters. They were icons. We don't currently have a professional wrestling icon that I know of. You know, I can't be that far removed from it, but it just does not seem to have that the popularity that it used to have. And it makes sense in a beta world that professional wrestling would just not have the grab that it once did in more of an alpha world. But anyway, you used to just like take it to the mats. That's what they do in wrestling. Like I said, they get the problem and it's like, all right, I challenge you to come and fight me at this pay-per-view event, you know, and then they have the big fight, they duke it out, and somebody takes home the belt, or somebody gets the girl, or some kind of prize, or whatever, bragging rights, whatever the case may be. But it's settled, you know, it's settled that way, usually. Unless the story doesn't want it to be settled, then there'll be some kind of nefarious cheating going on, third-party intervention, and no decisive action happens. But then they're just putting it off. They're just putting it off to the next pay-per-view event. But it will eventually get resolved in that manner, you know, because that's just the way, the alpha way. You settle it and move on. A lot of times these enemies end up becoming like tag team partners and shit like that, right? Tag team, for you don't know, is when you have two people versus two people or more in a ring at the same time, and they have a different set of rules that they go by. Used to be the most popular format of wrestling in the old days. Just as a little bit of an aside, but taking it to the match, right? My first observation is wrestling, and again, I'm not a fan. I've never been a fan of it, big fan. I've been just kind of like a peripheral observer periodically through time, and that time has not been. Last time I was a periodic observer of wrestling was like 1997, maybe 98, right? And those were some of the golden years of wrestling. There was something big going on. I'll get into that later. But it just so happened that my life at the time was conducive to taking professional wrestling on as a form of entertainment, where I was living with a woman who was a single mother and had a son who was of age who really liked the wrestling stuff. So I would sit with him as like his last hour of the night before he had to go to bed and get ready for school the next day sort of thing. You get what I'm saying? It was something that I would do with him. I would sit with him and explain things about the wrestling. And then I started to see what was going on with the characters. And, of course, my inquisitive mind starts getting into what's going on behind the scenes, right? And that's all played out, and it's all history now, and it can be spoken about. But my first observation with wrestling was similar. I was a kid of a young age, a little bit older than the boy that I was talking about in the previous story there. I was around the age of 9, 10, right, around that age. I had a kid in a neighborhood. He's a year older than me, and he knew all about wrestling. He grew up in a sort of different situation than me. Same neighborhood, same school, same friends and everything like that. But he was a little different. His father was like an old trucker, and, you know, an old school trucker, I should say, on the road all the time. And he was just a kid. For a kid, he was a little bit rough around the edges. But he knew all about wrestling. He knew all the wrestlers. He knew the moves and everything. He was really into it, right? And we would do sleepover thing. He'd come sleep over at my house on a Saturday night. Wrestling would be on TV late, and we would stay up late and watch it. And then we would like rip all the pillows off the couches and everything in my basement and start wrestling, you know, wrestling along with it, wrestling afterwards. He'd show me the moves, you know, we'd throw each other across the room. And this is what boys do, right? This is what boys do. It's a kid in my neighborhood back in Greenbrook, New Jersey, right? But for all that, I mean, it was fun like that for me as a kid. But to like just get involved with, I was a baseball player when I was a kid, secondarily a football player. That's what I was into. I wasn't really into any other sports. I would play basketball. I would play some form of street hockey. I would play like military games in the woods, you know, things like that. But I was not like engrossed or enthralled with anything, and I just didn't have anywhere on the plate for the wrestling thing. But I was a casual observer from the beginning, right? It never captured me. As I got older and remained a casual observer, I started in high school to equate certain kind of quote-unquote contact sports with some degree, element of faggotry, right? There was something kind of gay about guys that were sweaty and half-naked and rolling around on the floor with each other. I don't quite doubt that. Like, fighting is one thing, but that gets gay. It's like, you don't break out in a street fight and rip all your clothes off and start wrestling. No. You throw down whatever you got in your hand if it ain't a weapon, and you stay in the clothes that you got. If you got a nice jacket on or something like that, you might take it off, but you don't strip down naked to fight. And you're generally not rolling around, you know? Me, when I would fight, to this day, I would avoid as much contact as possible. I don't want to get hit, and I don't want to get grappling with nobody, you know? I'm good at that if I have to, but to me, good at it is getting out of it, you know? Somebody grapples with you, and you break it. And as you break it, you punch the shit out of them. And if you get them good, then you kick the shit out of them. And then you keep them on the ground until it's over. You know, that's fighting to me. And I think I don't want to get all lost up in that stuff. There's a long way to go here. A lot of stuff to cover, a short amount of time. But, you know, like football even, with all the pads and everything like that, just like the peripheral stuff, like in the locker room, in the shower, sharing shower, it always just seemed a little gay to me, all right? Hey, if I offend you out there, just check yourself. That's all right. If you're not a faggot, you're not a faggot. If you are, you are. And if you're unsure, well, grapple with that since you like grappling so much, right? But it just seemed, that kind of stuff seemed a little bit gay to me. It was not my thing. It was like the football, just remember what happened at Penn State with that Sandusky guy, right? The defensive coach of the Nittany Lions in Penn State. Back when was that? Around 2010 or so, somewhere in there. 2012, about 13, 14 years ago. There was this whole incident, and it went back in time, but this is when it all like kind of came to the light and everything like that. And then Joe Paterno turns up dead like the week after, strangely enough, never had to testify. But this guy was running a pedophile network out of Penn State University or out of his house. And it was just, if you don't know the story, go look it up. I hate pedophile stuff. I'm not a fan of gay things, but pedophile is just like, you cross the line and you're going to get a fucking mouthful of knuckles. Now, there's my F-bomb. I get an F-bomb an episode, right? I may get two this one because I didn't use one last episode. But you see what brings it out of me, right? You see what brings it out of me. In wrestling, there's another term of jargon, right? It's called exotica. Exotica. And that's basically where you take a wrestler who takes on a gimmick that is very, let's say, effeminate, right? Like gay, you know, gay. Acting like some kind of fag amongst men. They call it exotica. That I didn't know. That I just found out recently, right? An example of that, for all you guys who may remember, adorable Adrian Adonis, right? Once upon a time, he was like a leather-clad biker from Brooklyn, like in the 70s and the 80s, he resurrected himself as a queer, and he ran some side little show during wrestling events called the Flower Shop. I mean, it was gayer than gay can be. And I don't know what people are thinking when they bring that into that kind of realm, right? But he ran that line for a couple of years. And to me, that's just, forget it. That's where you turn the TV off. I was never down with that. But it just kind of proves my point that there's is definitely an element of faggotry involved with these contact sports, and you discern according to your capabilities. So anyway, so all this stuff I resolved early on, like wrestling, professional wrestling, with the quote unquote fakeness of it all, the storylines and everything. To me, it always just read as a 3D comic book, you know, if you get what I'm saying there. It's a production. It's like somebody wrote a comic book. You got all these big muscle-bound superheroes, which is exactly who these guys are. And in the 70s and the 80s, they were banging the hell out of steroids, and they were just ballooning up like crazy. They were larger than life. They literally looked like what you would see on the pages of a comic strip, you know, comic books. Big, larger-than-life superheroes running around and acting according to storylines, right? There's no difference. I think 3D comic book is a supreme description of what's going on with professional wrestling in general, right? If you can appreciate as a nerd a comic book, which so many nerds do, then you can understand that professional wrestling is a comic book for maybe somebody who's not a nerd. Somebody who doesn't collect things like that. Somebody who doesn't want to spend his time reading, right? I like to read. I can respect the comic book, and I can also respect this professional wrestling, you know? But these are not the things that fascinate me about it. Maybe when I was a kid, like, I understood it that way, and as an adult, I still do. So I see, you know, somebody's trying to write a story and use characters. It's no different than any TV show, any drama that you'd watch, any theater that you'd watch. It's just a different element of people involved. Now, you're talking about, generally speaking, all right, failed athletes, people who were football players who lost their career because they had an ego out on them. They're already big and strong, usually on the steroids. They just move over. They learn how to act. They learn some wrestling holds, and they're in the business, right? So many cases of that. So many, like, ex-football players. Then you've got the guys who were amateur wrestlers in high school and in college, and then what do you do with that? There's no real pro technical wrestling game out there. There's no way to make money except to coach high school, you know, and just keep perpetuating that whole thing. A lot of those guys will turn into this whole professional wrestling thing. They'll take up the acting, they'll learn up different throws and things like that. A class of people who started out kind of on a straight and narrow, you know, and instead of going into the military with all their strength and their bravado and their fight, they stayed with sports, got injured, or played a sport that just lost its relevance in their life, and they moved into this 3D comic book. Like I said earlier, it was on TV at times, like when I was either drunk or hungover, and that's kind of how I started to get the familiarity going. It became more routine in my life in the early 80s, like when I was in high school, and maybe the year after I graduated, before I went into the military. There was a lot of drunk time, there was a lot of hangover time, there was a lot of downtime in general, right? So I was familiar with a lot of the wrestlers from the 80s, you know. In fact, like, I think, like, in the WWF back then, go like into the mid 80s, you had Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, the Iron Sheik, right, the Iranian guy, Randy Savage came around, Honky Tonk Man, Superfly Snuka, Bam Bam Bigelow, Jersey guy right there, right? Hart Foundation from Canada, that's, is that Bret the Hitman Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart, if I remember, see, going off the top of my head, Rowdy Roddy Piper, George the Animal Steel, King Kong Bundy, Greg the Hammer Valentine, Coco Beware, Sergeant Slaughter, right? Just a handful of many names of certain notoriety from that place and time. And I gotta tell you, I've been having like a little bit of a 80s nostalgia going on in me in the past week or two also. And I don't know what that's about, because I hate the 80s. I hated the styles. I hated the music. I hated everything. That's why I was on drugs the whole time, right? Always trying to run away. It's just, I was born 10 years too early, or I was born 10 years too late. And the 80s were just the time that I did not need to be peaking in my cultural existence, right? My cultural relevance. Your teenage years, your early 20s. Mine was in the 80s. How suck is that for somebody who's more 90s and more 70s, right? That's the way it played out for me. I just can't seem to get my timing down in this damn lifetime. But all this 80s nostalgia, I actually went and downloaded so I could have a playlist of some songs that would just kind of trigger what was going on with me in the 80s, you know, by music. These are not songs or artists that I would generally listen to. I didn't spend money on their cassettes, as it was at the time, eventually coming into CDs and MP3s later on down the road. I didn't spend money, but the shit was on the radio constantly, and there was always a radio on somewhere, right? A lot of what people call quote-unquote 80s music was always pop. You know, there was a place in time where, like, everything was pop music. You know, the bad elements of music back then was, you know, punk rock was gone and behind you. You had post-punk, which was, I guess, kind of weird and more collegiate. You get them on college radio stations, which would then become, you had the alternate music like REM, again, college type of music. But generally, what was called rock was also like mixed in with pop. All the hair band music, those would be on top 45 stations. You know, I'll give you some examples. I downloaded some Modern English, right? That's they had one song, Melt the World With You, I'll Stop the World and Melt With You. I remember that from high school. That was an MTV thing. Billy Squire, right? Billy Squire. That was pop. The guy played rock. It sounded like Led Zeppelin. You know, it was like a decent Led Zeppelin ripoff. And at a time when all the big dinosaur bands of the 70s had all OD'd and broke up, now you had these kind of people coming in and kind of filling that void momentarily. You know, Billy Squire, ZZ Top actually stepped up, but I always liked ZZ Top from the 70s anyway. They gained their notoriety in the void of the 80s, you know, with all the digital music and all that crap that came in. There was still some edgy, hard blues to be had, although it was digitized and it was 80s-ified. That's a word from my personal dictionary, right? A Modern English download, a Billy Squire download. This thing called Planet P, I had no idea. Another MTV thing, right? Stray Cats, you know that. That's the rockabilly revival. Scorpions, another heavy metal that was played on top 45, like Billy Squire, right? Rat, same thing. They were a hair band. They were played pop. That was pop music. Any radio station at any time, in any scenario, any company, the Billy Squires and Rats and Scorpions, even Stray Cats. Here, Joan Jett. I took a Joan Jett song, I remember, from my freshman year of high school. Reminds me of a buddy of mine back up in New Jersey. I love rock and roll, right? Pop music. And then the last one was Crowded House. That was... Hey now. Don't dream it's over. Right? That's an anthem. A Generation X anthem. It's a band, Crowded House, from New Zealand, of all places. But they made this song at the height of the 80s. It had these undertones of how I see it as globalist destruction, right? There was always this impending doom on my generation, on Generation X. We had the nuclear bombs, the nuclear holocaust just draped over us. We were living in this active threat for our entire lives into those days. And now we have a song by this New Zealand band that's really a conversation when you look at the lyrics. It's an anthem, so it's worth exploring briefly. I mean, it's a little bit of a side jag, but let's just go with it for a minute here, because, you know, we're talking about wrestling, and really we're talking about wrestling and wrestling stars of the 80s predominantly. Here, right? And then really how that relates in Texas is because everything we do in post-Orland monologics is really tying back to Texas. But this song is bigger than Texas. It's a whole generation. It's anthemic. It's speaking to that impending doom. And like I started to say, it was this conversation between two people. I don't know if it's just like a dude and his buddy, or if it's a guy and his girlfriend, but it's a couple of Generation X people that are engaged in a conversation where one of them is just distraught over the impending doom of it all. And the other one is the singer, the orator of the song, is trying to bring encouragement to that distraught person, right? And that is a theme of a generation right there, right? Capiche? And I never really thought of it. I felt it. I kind of had the gist of it, but I never really saw how much it mattered until I seen a couple, few now, generations go by. You know, you had the millennials come and go, then you had the Gen Z thing is going on, right? And then there's even like, they're calling generation, what, alpha, the little kids now? Before they even have an identity, they have a name, apparently. But seeing the differences that the millennials and Generation Z went through and the different attributes that they picked up as a result. This is all sociological, and it may be just about as much bullshit as anything, you know? But there is, in my generation, a collective sense of something, a camaraderie when an anthemic song of our time, whether we like the music of our day, whether we like the day, whether we even like the people, right? Like me, I really didn't care for any of all of it. But it still hits me in the same way it hits millions of others, right? So that's the song anyway. So getting back to the here and now and things lately, like I said earlier, probably the previous episode, I've been watching a lot of videos. I've been just entertaining myself with old pro wrestling matches, you know, TV presentations, big events, pay-per-view events where they're available for free to watch. You know, some of these things I've seen before, some of these things I've never seen before. And then there's a lot of history, you know, a lot of good documentaries out there because wrestling is compelling. There's really two sides of the coin when it comes to wrestling because, you know, the work of it all, the presentation, the business of it all, it's entertainment, right? In fact, WWF, World Wrestling Federation, the big monopoly of wrestling that came out of New York, right, with Vince McMahon, that has been renamed, and it was so like 20 years ago or more now, to WWE, right? It was World Wrestling Federation. Now it's, I think, World Wrestling Entertainment, but it's WWE. It's gone from Federation to Entertainment. So we know that this is a matter of entertainment because the people who present it that way, right? Entertainment, that's one side of the coin. It's about these larger-than-life people creating these larger-than-life characters that live out a realm of a 3D comic strip, a comic book. But on the other side of the coin, you've got the reality of these people living their day-to-day situations. Like I said, it's compelling. The true life stories of it all really add to it. There's so much to see about the human condition when you look at the lives of professional wrestlers inside the ring and outside the ring, right? That's a key to it all. And I think any sports, you know, that you could be a fan of, you're not really a fan until you understand the people on a more personal level. You understand, like, who's playing injured on the Yankees today? Who's playing injured on the Dallas Cowboys? Who's going through a rough divorce, right? You start to understand a little bit about the personal lives of the people involved. These are the things that the management, the coaches have to coach and the coaches have to manage. They have to deal with these situations and still put a team on the field and try to win the game somehow, right? Knowing the game at that level brings so much more interest into it, right? So when you call yourself a fan, that's what a fan is being, right? A fan is really understanding what is going on a very personal level, I think. That's my way of looking at it, right? And to watch these historical documentaries and then go back and look at the old matches, having an idea what the background is. These are not just these big galoots up there faking a wrestling match. There's so much more going on that doesn't meet the eye. Unless you are really engaged with it, then it becomes fascinating, right? Compelling stuff, like I said, the true life stories. They're actors that live like rock stars do, right? In Hollywood, you got the Hollywood actors, they live a certain way. And then the rock stars, they live a certain way. And these pro wrestlers, they're both. They're actors like Hollywood, but they live like the rock stars. And there's so many stories of these incredible and rapid risings and fallings, you know, the rise and fall of these people. And these stories are full of all kinds of intrigue, you know, involving like drugs and steroids, you know, the rage, the road rage, overdoses, murders, suicides. Obviously, you're going to get failed relationships in the middle of all that mayhem. So you'll get divorce stories, you know, and all the he said, she said that you could ever want. Yeah, and a lot of it spills over out of personal lives onto the stage of wrestling. You know, there's a lot of overlap. A real gray area sometimes occurs, but often, and probably more often than not, personal lives are personal, right? But if you know a guy's going through this stuff while you're watching it, watching him act out on TV, it just brings a whole another dimension to it, right? It makes sense, doesn't it? And, you know, I think the reality of it all is more interesting than the theater of all these manufactured angles that they drum up. But the two of them working cohesively, like I said, there's so much about the human condition being revealed in these stories, the fake comics and the actual tragedy, right? That's going on. It's really, I think that's what's driving me. You know, I think that's what I'm finding compelling about it all, and just why I'm keeping at it, and why this is the first, you know, the first post-Arlen monologues I've done in a whole year, and here's the subject matter, right? But of course, it directly ties in a big way to Texas, so we'll come back to that momentarily. You know, besides the documentaries and the old matches that you could watch online, there's also a lot of interviews, right? And there's interviews where you've got these actors who are now coming out of their roles and speaking as humans, right? Their true life, and they have interviews, and when they're speaking out of character, they call these interviews, and here's some more wrestler jargon, shoots, right? Quote unquote shoots, for whatever reason. I don't know the etymology of it all, but they call them shoots, right? And I've watched a bunch of them, right? Watch a bunch of them. Now you're getting opinion, and you're getting history based on opinion by people who are actually like there going through the times. And one guy sees it this way, another guy sees it that way. And if you watch a bunch of them, you could start to put the whole story together and just get an understanding of what was going on in professional wrestling in this territory at this time. You know what I'm saying? And like I said, I've watched a bunch of them. And I think I have like a top five that are really valued. Gene Okerlund was a longtime announcer and interviewer for the World Wrestling Federation, and I think he jumped over late in his career into the WCW, which was the old Ted Turner thing that got bested by Vince McMahon in New York and no longer exists. It got absorbed into the WWF, and that's when it became the WWE. But Gene Okerlund did a really great shoot that you could find out there on YouTube. Bam Bam Bigelow, right? The guy from Asbury Park up in Jersey. He did a really excellent one, if you could find it out there. Honky Tonk Man, he's a Memphis dude. They had a really big territory centered around Memphis back in the 70s, early 80s. And he came out of that. I mean, he grew up around that and he came out of that. There's a couple that he did, three, four of them. And they were all very good and very informative, you know, of course, from his perspective on things, but it's a valuable perspective nonetheless. There was one that was an interview, and I'm not so sure you would call it a shoot. It kind of is, it kind of isn't. There's a little insider dope. It really is from the perspective of a guy in his non-wrestling life. So I guess it would be a shoot in that manner. Kevin Von Erich, he's the surviving Von Erich of all of Von Erich's sons, right? And I'm going to get into some more of the explicit details of the tragedy there, right? There was, I think, five boys, and four of them didn't make it long into their adulthood, right? And the sole survivor is this Kevin, who's alive to this day. And he's either somewhere out in East Texas, not far from where I'm sitting right now, within an hour, or he's over in Hawaii. That's what happened to the family fortune, as far as I was able to gather out of his mouth, right? So really good. And these are fairly long. You're talking anywhere in the length of an hour to like 3 or 4 hours of interview time, right? A lot of information to be had out there. So Kevin Von Erich was a valued quote-unquote shoot that I saw. And Greg the Hammer Valentine, who grew up in a business, basically. His father was a famous wrestler from like the 50s, right? Johnny Valentine, I believe. I'm not familiar, but if I remember right. So Greg the Hammer Valentine, big name in the 80s. He has a couple of them out there, actually, and they're all very good. And a couple of honorable mentions that I pulled together at the last minute. These guys were not wrestlers, per se. They were what they call managers in the business, right? And two of them, Paul Bearer, who's the manager of The Undertaker, as well as some others, and had been doing it for a long time, who was involved with the whole Dallas scene for many years. And then, he did a great shoot interview, really good. And Bobby the Brain Heenan, another manager who was big in the World Wrestling Federation in the 80s and 90s. Big name. Anybody who knows wrestling knows this guy's name. He did a really excellent interview. And both of them at great length, right? Great length. And these guys, you know, I list these out. Most of these people are dead now. In fact, maybe half of them are still alive, half of them are dead, just out of that short list. You know, you got two things going on. You've got that wrestler lifestyle, but you also got the age of everybody, too. These guys are now in, you know, in their 60s, late 60s, 70s, some of them 80s, if they're still alive, you know. So if they're not dying of the lifestyle, they're starting to die of the complications of getting old otherwise. Another honorable mention thing, this is not really a great shoot. It kind of is, right? There was a podcast, it definitely is, right? It's just a little bit different. The interviewer was actually a wrestler, and then the person being interviewed was another wrestler. They were both very big names at the same time in the 90s. Both dudes from Texas. I mentioned them earlier, right? It's called the Broken Skull Podcast, and there's this one particular episode where it's hosted by Steve Austin, and he's interviewing The Undertaker, right? These were contemporaries. These guys were of fame, but one was in the WCW, one was in the WWF, and they were basically the big names of the 90s. And then it all came to a head when they started having the Monday Night Raw war. I'll talk about that more momentarily, right? But that was a really good interview. Look that one up if you're interested in this sort of thing. A lot of good insider dope on that. So getting back to it, like I had spoken before, I mentioned it once or twice already, pro wrestling once, you know, back in the day, back in the 80s and all the time before that, and really through the 90s is when it started to come undone, right? Started to get all absorbed by the big guys, and ultimately the one biggest fish in the pond was the New York territory, which just sucked everything up into it, and now it's a globalist entity. It's not anything like it used to be, and it's lost all its regional charm. It really has. And I'm not a fan of it, and I stopped being a fan of it when it happened. But it was, once upon a time, it was a territorial thing, a regional thing, and you know, the wrestlers, they had the lifestyle, as I've described, like rock stars. They were actors that were living like rock stars. And when you're living on that edge and you're doing all that partying and everything is intense, and all the girls, all the sluts are coming into it like groupies, you know, you're really living like rock stars like that. You start burning the candle at both ends and you really do start pissing people off, you know. People get addicted to things, right? The addicted personality types, they start getting addicted. Their priorities get skewed, and work is disrupted, all kinds of problems happen as a result of it, and you might lose your spot in a territory, so you end up what? You drift to the next territory and see if you can make yourself a new start, right? Once upon a time, you were able to do it like that. Now, you fail once, and that's it, because there's only one game in town, pretty much. I mean, there's some small operations out there, but it's not the territorial thing it was. You just got local promotions doing their thing. I know there's something going down by San Antonio because a girl I went to high school with is divorced from a guy she was married to who was a wrestler down there, right? Living that same rock and roll lifestyle, which was crazy. She's had a crazy time of it. I had long conversations well into the night with her when I first got back to Texas. about all the problems and all the crap that she experienced, and that really put a bad taste in my mouth for the whole lifestyle, right? The way people are. Now you're treating a friend of mine, one of those Gen X people from back in the day, who's a sister to me, right? She gets married to some guy and gets abused in so many ways. And yet she still can't walk away from it because all of the buzz that comes with that notoriety. And it was just too much. I was just like, you know what? You can't help somebody that don't really want to be helped. So I had to let it go. I had to just let it go and just not keep myself involved with that situation at all. Very sad, very crazy. You know, the lifestyle, I keep talking about the lifestyle. I'm hoping as I go through it, more and more details of that lifestyle comes through. But these guys were always on the road. That's like the rock star aspect of it all. Constantly. They work one night here, and then they're traveling the next day to work one night there, and then they're traveling. And they're not home for months. It's worse than being a truck driver, right? And in the meantime, they're flinging themselves in and out of their stage, and it's the ring over the ropes, crashing on the floor, chair busted over the head. Let me tell you something, that stuff is real. It has to be to a degree. They're not hitting people with the full force of their capability of hitting, but they're hitting people so that it makes enough of a sound, and you're getting hit with a metal chair on the head. You know, that's real. And so much of it is real, you know, jumping off the top rope and landing flat on your knees and your elbows, and you know, putting your chest on the other guy's chest, and if you're off just by a splinter, you know, you're actually hitting somebody good and hard, driving the wind out of them, maybe cracking a rib. You do all this stuff, and you have no time to heal from it. You go to sleep at night after all the cocaine and all the whiskey and the liquor. You get up with a hangover. You got to hit the gym because you're hitting the road quick. So this is what you're doing. You're wasted, you're hungover, you're in the gym, you're taking steroids so you can heal from everything, and then you got to perform again that night after traveling all day, okay? And this goes on for maybe 30 days in a row. You don't get a break. Think about that. And this is what makes these people nuts, right? Nuts. And some of them make good money out of it. Some of them make decent money out of it. And some of them just don't, right? There's really tears. When you watch a pro wrestling presentation, really from any era, you've got what they call high card, low card, a medium card, right? You've got these events, they have different names for them. Like the first couple of them will be a couple of nobodies go out there and just slap each other around while people are getting their drinks and getting situated and everything. And then they'll bring in somebody that might be a medium card guy, you know. He's got a little bit of a name. He's developing a character. And then he's going to be with one of those low card nobodies and slapping him around, right? Winning and just trying to build himself up. And then you got the high card guys. These are the big name people. And they wrestle each other. And you know, you're wrestling low card, you're wrestling medium card or middle card, and you're wrestling high card. And you get paid accordingly, right? So you develop your character and you become famous, and then you get these matches that pay out more. And that's the name of the game, right? And, you know, the low card guys had it so bad that they would share dirty roach motel rooms, and they would be living off of bologna sandwiches while living that whole lifestyle with all the drugs and the whiskey and the steroids and the workouts and the traveling. And when they finally got to eat something, they can only afford a bologna sandwich, you know, and they lived in a dirty motel room somewhere on the road in the middle between here and there, and had to share a room, 3, 4, 5 guys. I mean, somebody's on the floor, right? It's crazy, crazy. And it's just no damn wonder, no damn wonder.
This monologue is continued in the next episode, Chapter 00084, Hornswoggle, Part 3.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Stalin Monologics. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Stalin Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at poststalin.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@poststalin.com.